Next up, we are going to learn about a show that thankfully does not deal with real events. That would be the hit Netflix sci-fi thriller Stranger Things. It's set in the 80s. It takes place in the fictional town of Hawkins, Indiana, where a young boy goes missing, and then things get, yes, stranger.
Clever.
Apropos title.
Our associate producer, James Kim, interviewed the Emmy-nominated composers and sound design team from the show. I mean, this was the hottest soundtrack last year.
It was.
James, why did you pick these folks?
I've always been fascinated with sound design and scoring, which are two things we spend so much time on our show doing.
This is true.
For our Look Up and Listen special a few weeks back, folks may not know this, we spent about 2,000 billion hours trying to find the right cricket sounds.
Yeah, if you double that number, that's actually the more correct hour amount.
It was a lot.
Yeah, but I actually wanted to know what the process is like for the TV industry, since we do it so much in radio, especially on a show like Stranger Things, where there's like an alternate universe called the Upside Down World. There's a girl who has psychokinetic powers, and there's even a monster called the Demogorgon.
I don't know, James. I don't really see what's so difficult about that. You just find a Demogorgon and tape it. How hard can that be?
It's a field
recording.
Brandon,
it's not that easy. Well, at least according to Joe Barnett, who's a sound mixer for the show, he told me about his impressions after the first time he met the Stranger Things creators, Matt and Ross Duffer.
They sort of had some broad outline of what they wanted to do, and I had no clue what they were talking about at first, but then it sort of slowly developed, and Brad and his partner, Craig Hennigan, they developed it from there.
Brad North is the sound supervisor, and Craig Hennigan is a sound editor for the show. They're the ones who create the sounds of the Upside Down World, the monster, and even the buzzing sounds of the light bulbs being turned on. The Duffer brothers showed Brad and his team clips from old films they wanted to replicate to give them some inspiration.
There was Close Encounters, there was E.T., there was some John Carpenter's sort of stuff. Trust me, you know those movies. When you watch the show, you can see the influences.
Stranger Things definitely has a lot of elements from those 80s sci-fi films. But there's one thing the show does particularly well: building tension. I remember watching the first episode, and I was covering my ears during the scary parts. There was something about the sound of the show that just made me tense up, specifically in one of the early scenes where a young boy named Will sees the Demogorgon for the first time. I want to walk you through that scene, sonically, with some commentary from Brad North. So Will is riding his bike back home after playing Dungeons and Dragons with his friends. It's night, and he's riding alone through a dark street. His bike light starts to flicker on and off. And then he sees the Demogorgon.
We have a big hit from sound design on that. We have our very first vocal on that. And it was cool because we have a bit of a breath after that before we were on a chase. And we can hear like the tick of the bicycle wheel going round and round from the gear, which was just kind of a cool vibe to it.
There's also that sound of a monster who kind of comes in. Where did you start and how did you get the ideas to create the sound of the monster?
So I'll try to speak on Craig's behalf because
sure.
That was all Craig. So they had a couple of test runs at it. He made them kind of big, and it didn't really work very well because it sounded too much like orcs from like Lord of the Rings, and just didn't fit. So he kind of started over and started with different animals and stuff, and he ended up liking this seal library that he got and was messing around there. And then he added from there on. So like, you know, pig squeals for the higher screams and added stuff on top of it.
All right, let's get back to the scene. Now, Will has made it through the woods and back to his house, but no one's home.
Mom? Jonathan? Mom?
The Demogorgon follows Will back to his place. He tries to call someone, but the landline phone isn't working. Will runs into the shed in the backyard and loads a gun. There's a hanging light bulb that shines down on Will as he stands there, waiting for the monster. The Demogorgon appears behind Will, and all of the sound just keeps building. The camera cuts to a light bulb, getting brighter and brighter. That moment you heard, the building of sound and then just a snap, it's what Brad and his team call a rise and cut. One sound that stuck out to me was the buzzing sound from the light bulb.
We used a battery charger that had this really funky, zappy sound to it. That's in there. So there's all sorts of crazy...
Where'd you get the charger from?
It was Craig's battery charger that sounded like it was on the fritz, so he recorded it.
I mean, it's insane that you guys are able to kind of identify all these kind of natural sounds from just real world and go, oh, that sounds different. That sounds something unique and new.
Yeah. It's really interesting if you stick a mic close to something that's not working right, you might get something interesting. We do that quite a bit.
Those rise and cut moments happen a lot throughout the first season. And it isn't just up to the sound design team to make those scenes work.
So can we make it rise and then snap out?
Yeah, that was a recent phone call. You know how we like our rises.
That's composers Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein. They're talking about how they're always getting studio notes about the rise and cut effect. This is the first time that Kyle and Michael have ever composed music for a show. The Austin-based duo mainly write music for their synth band Survive. The Duffer Brothers loved their music and asked them to work on Stranger Things.
At first, I think we started off a little bit more musical, like trying to write like dark, conventional music, and then
notes.
that you could notate. And what ended up being more effective is a lot more just experimental music than I think we were initially expecting.
Was it challenging to create music to scare people?
In a way, yeah. Figuring out what works, what actually does scare people, took some work, because like you can't make a 70s like giallo soundtrack like if there's like a funk bass and like a drum kit that comes in. People start laughing, they're not scared anymore. So you have to kind of use a lot more of the weirder experimental stuff, which is great for us because we like to do that.
That's interesting that you guys kind of mentioned about like it can get corny pretty quickly.
We were real careful.
Yeah.
Walking on eggshells.
Yeah, that must have been a difficult process. I'm assuming like were those first drafts of your score just kind of where you're just like, oh man, we're not hitting it right.
No.
Well, I mean, yeah, we just killed it, right? I mean, it was super easy.
No. We did get this note from them early on that was, this is too synthy. And we're like, what are they talking about?
You hired a synth band.
Oh,
so it took a minute to figure out what that meant. And once we did, that helped a lot.
What did that mean?
When you hear a synth go, wow, you know, or like, wah, like anything that's like super overly like resonant. It's usually like, a resonance pew, knob, pew. Or like a laser.
If it sounds like a laser at all,
yeah.
Probably not going to get in the show.
It took a few tries before Kyle and Michael figured out how to score for TV. For instance, the first piece of music you hear in the show, titled Kids, was the first piece they worked on. And it was also one of the last ones they finished.
The opening cue had to set the whole tone of what people were getting into. And that kind of took a while to hone in for us.
But yeah, we wrote that thing like 20 times, I would say. I think that's the last thing that we actually finished was the first song.
Crap.
Because they wanted to get it right, and we just kept trying different things.
We scored that more like traditionally, where you just kind of follow every single thing that happens on screen, like Mickey Mousing it and stuff like whatever. I guess that's the term.
It is. Mickey Mousing in the film and TV industry is when the music syncs up perfectly with the actions on screen. Like the music from the old black and white Mickey cartoons, where a bass drum hit would play when someone gets bonked in the head.
And that just didn't work as much. It's really fun when you have something that can carry the mood as well and tell the story, but it's just like has more of a song feel. When we can accomplish that, I think it's really powerful.
While there's a lot of work that goes into the music and sound design for Stranger Things, there have been moments where the team works on a scene or a piece of score and it's cut completely from the edit. Joe Barnett, the re-recording mixer, says that it's all about figuring out how to tell the story best with sound.
Each department brings to the stage their perfect vision of what everything should be. So the music might be wonderful just by itself, but when you put it against dialogue, when you put it against sound effects, when you put it against the ambiences, it may not have enough punch, or it may not have enough subtlety, or whatever. And so we mix it in a way that it applies itself to the screen in a more effective way.
There's probably something where you worked until like 3-4 in the morning, and then they go, "Now we don't need any of this."
Never happened.
That, yeah, right. that's part of the gig. It's part of the gig on all of our sides. That's part of the gig. You could build this biggest sound designy moment, and you just hit mute on all of it, and it works better. It happens with everyone. Yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing with actors. Sometimes they really brought it, and then that scene gets cut. But it's for the betterment of the show, so it happens. You can't be married to your work.
Exactly.
That
you can't let it get to you.
Like, filmmaking, you can be proud 101.
Of it. You can be proud of it, but
yep.
Don't get your feelings hurt if it disappears.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the best exercises or just things I've been taught. Like, having an issue of kind of being a perfectionist at times and just beating stuff for just working on forever and doing like the smallest change that no one will ever hear. It doesn't even matter. It's been hours. And then now it's great that I can make something real quick, send it over, and not be attached to it. Like, I'm finally learned how to do that. Because you can't get too attached to something.
Associate producer James Kim talking with the Emmy-nominated sound design team and composers of Netflix's Stranger Things.